Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Greg, and we have not as full a panel as we had last week, starting us off to talk about a exciting and horrifying win against Fulham. We have Brian Ashlock. Brian, welcome back. How are you doing?
Doing great. Real happy to be here to talk about Spurs on this happiest of weeks.
You know, usually we used to be a lot more up after wins. What happened to us?
We started winning games shittily instead of just losing them, which is, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, good, but for the mood of the podcast, bad.
Well, it'd be nice if we could win a game without, you know, losing one of our key players to either, you know, injury or their second international tournament in the same season. But alas, that is not our fate this year. Next up, we have the odd man out from last week's podcast. It's coming to us straight from the, let me check my notes, Dele Alli news desk. It's Rito Wellevout. Rob, how's it going?
The Dele Alli news desk is broken, so we've slapped a fresh coat of paint on the Moussa Sissoko news desk, and we're ready to go.
Are you ready to go? Are you as raring to go as Moussa?
Hopefully my groin is in better shape, but yes.
Well, we'll leave that call to Monica. So, anyway, we have a win to talk about. Let's focus on the positives at first. Tottenham beat Fulham 2-1 at Craven Cottage this weekend with a extremely late goal from Harold Winks. This is Tottenham Harold Football Club now. It is only Harry's score bangers for us. It was a very dramatic win. It was kind of fun to watch that, Rob, right? Like, focusing on the positives. We rather enjoyed pumping fists with everyone in the Spurs bar we watched it in, didn't we?
We sure did. I will say we would not have enjoyed that moment as much as we did if not for everything else that came before it and how utterly horrible it was.
Well, let's focus on that. That was a... I don't know how more if that goal could have been more improbable. Not only was it a 93rd minute winner with 4 minutes of stoppage time or whatever it was, not only was it a Harry Winks header, but it was assisted by a pinpoint cross from George, Kevin, and Kudu. Is there some sort of reverse cosmic karma at work here, or is Fulham just that bad?
Fulham's pretty bad. If you asked any average Tottenham fan to diagnose the final play of the game that would win it for them and name the players involved, unless they had eaten a lot of peyote beforehand, I don't think they would have said Nkudu crossing to Harry Winks for a header in the final seconds. So, I got nothing. That was bananas. I do recall about 20 minutes into the game saying something like, what the hell is Harry Winks doing in the box?
Second week in a row.
We've now learned is a thing they've told him to do. So, hey, if it keeps working out like this, it's great.
Well, let's talk about Harry Winks. Brian, what do you think of the Winksessence?
I mean, I'm not sold on it, but he's been a lot better in the last... what would it be, like the last month or so? Or, you know, at least since Christmas, which I guess is about a month now. You know, he if you look at just, like, some of his counting stats, where you look at, like, just the sheer number of tackles and interceptions that he's involved in, he's been more active when Spurs don't have the ball, and he's still putting up the same kind of passing numbers that we were seeing. And in this game, he got... partnered with Eric Dier at the end, and that kind of gave him the freedom to make that run into the box. And you know, if he can, if he adds that dimension to his game and continues to improve in terms of his defensive actions, then yeah, maybe I'll start to buy into the Winksaissance.
Brought to you by the people who brought us the Benaissance. So you are excited to see the continuing adventures of a dire Winks midfield.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of like the dire Winks midfield. But, you know, Dyer Sissoko might be pretty much the same thing. Or
oof.
I mean, you know, we haven't really played with a midfield in months, so who even knows what a dire anything midfield would look like? Yeah, I mean, I'm here for it. It's the best options that we have available right now, especially if with all the injuries.
We're recording this on Wednesday night in America, so this might be outdated very quickly, but do you think we're going to see Winks? Do you think we're going to see Winks and Dyer against Chelsea?
I would think so, yes. I mean, we are away to Chelsea. We are up one goal. That is like the more defensive control the game midfield out of the 2.5 healthy midfielders that we have. So I guess that's if I was Pochettino, that's what I'd put out.
So we had a really exciting goal by Harry Winks. We had a really exciting performance by Harry Winks. But really, the extreme negative of this game was the guy we were kind of counting on to carry us through our injury patch got hurt. And he's probably out for a month and a half if, you know, sort of past history is any indication. But Dele Alli pulled his hamstring. It is not great. We're looking at he probably won't be back till the month of March. Rob, how huge a blow is this for Spurs?
Yeah, it's real bad. Because, I mean, you make a pretty good case for Dele Alli being our best player, certainly since injury crisis 2018-19 began. We were kind of hoping that he could hold midfield together, maybe play striker, do kind of everything in between. Until we started getting guys back. So, yeah, it's a pretty big blow. He's out for, this about 6 weeks, which, given that it's a hamstring, probably could have been a lot worse. And we're just starting to see guys begin to trickle back in. So maybe it's not horrible. But, yeah, of all the remaining players to lose, is probably the one you would least want is to lose Alli.
Brian, how do you think Spurs are going to compensate for his loss over the next month?
We will not.
Oof. Okay, how will they try to compensate for his loss?
I mean, look, theoretically, we still have quite a few attacking midfielders. Discounting Heung-Min Son, who is still away on international duty, we still have Eric Lamela, Lucas Moura, Christian Eriksen. Okay, we have those three guys. And I don't know. I mean, everybody just has to play all of the minutes now. You know, no rest for Lamela, who is still recovering from, you know, a serious hip injury that kept him out for like a year. No rest for Lucas Moura, who had who knows what was wrong with him, knee, ankle, whatever. And no rest ever for Christian Eriksen, because why would he ever get to rest? And that's just what has to happen. I mean, short of us making a signing, which is
what?
Yeah, I know. Who even knows what that is?
Are we allowed to do that?
I don't think we are. I think it's punishment by the FA for not moving into the stadium. And we've been shadow banned from transfers. And not enough people are talking about this. But yeah, so there's no real other option, especially because you don't even have Harry Kane to sort of.
He'll be back in 2 weeks. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. So, and the thing about Dele is Dele is, aside from Christian Eriksen, the player that sort of makes Spurs tick the most. Dele does so many things, both in the press, in midfield, in attack. He just does so much for Spurs, and there's just no way to replace all of that.
And what's so valuable about Dele, especially this year, is they've really moved him around to where they've needed him. Oh, we need somebody who can, you know, really attack in their half. Let's use Dele for that. Oh, we need someone who can sort of transition our midfield to attack. Let's use Dele for that. Oh, we need someone who can control the midfield. Like, let's use Dele for that. And, you know, he's become very versatile for us this year. And that was one of the reasons I was at least semi-optimistic about our ability to weather this injury crisis, is we were going to be able to use him to sort of knit together our midfield while we waited for some of these guys to come back. Now, some of these guys are coming back, so it's a little less dire than it was before, if you see what I did there. But it's still really going to hurt, because he's one of our best players and one of the few players who wasn't out injured. And now, you know, we have to make do with even more. And maybe if we were out of the League Cup and we just had... You know, we could sort of slow roll the FA Cup and, you know, not really focus on that as much, or just focus on the Champions League and the league. That would be one thing. But, you know, we are in four competitions right now. It's going to be really fucking complicated.
And the other thing is we're kind of in a weird spot with a lot of our youth players, where we don't really have anyone that's sort of...
Skim, not, kind of.
Yeah, but he's more of a defensive... or, you know, a defensive midfielder type player, but he's really the only one that's in an age group, you know, of the 18, 19, 20 year olds that's kind of like knocking on the door of the first team, or, you know, is viewed as being so obviously talented that he warrants a place consistently on the bench or in the team. We don't have guys, you know, a guy like a Winks or even a Tom Carroll level player who you're like, oh, well, we can definitely throw him out there and he'll be largely fine. You know, we don't have anybody like that. We're talking about, you know, Keziah Sterling or 16-year-old Troy Parrott being on the bench as ancillary strikers or attacking midfielders. Like, these are guys who haven't even played, you know, any professional football, and some of them, you know, not playing all that much for the under 23s. So it's just like we're you know, in years past, you know, when Emmanuel Adebayor wasn't playing well, you know, you had, you know, the hope that, oh, Harry Kane is out there and he can come into the team and maybe he can play well. Or you had Tom Carroll or Harry Winks or once upon a time Ryan Mason and Nabil Bentaleb. You just don't really have that right now at Spurs, and that coupled with no signings and all these injuries, it just makes it real hard to figure out what we're going to do.
So, Rob, let's talk about a player who is like a new signing. George Kevin Nkudu came out of nowhere and basically, I mean, he got us 3 points, which is, say whatever else you want to say about Nkudu this year. He got us 3 points, directly got us 3 points. There's been some drama this week about if we're looking to sell him. It sounds like we're trying to offload him, but I guess with the injury crisis, we might wait. But with Vincent Janssen and the under-23s sort of seemingly exiled to Poch's doghouse, some people were asking if Nkudu was in our plans, and clearly he's in our plans in a way that Janssen isn't. Do you see Nkudu being any kind of integrated in any meaningful way into the way Spurs play for the rest of the year?
Well, I mean, with Dele out, we need attacking midfielders, because one of the attacking midfielders is probably going to get some run as a striker. So, you know, there are minutes there. Pochettino has put him on the bench a few times, hasn't really used him that much, but seemed to indicate that he'd be willing to give him a shot. So it might just be until a good enough offer comes from some team in France to take him on loan, he's going to play. So, I mean, we saw him do a good against Fulham. Maybe he can, you know, he's got fresh legs. He's not dead. So we'll give him a shot, see what he can do. There's very little evidence he can do a whole lot. But even if it's just, eating up some minutes until some of the other guys are ready to go. I don't know. I feel like we kind of forgot that he existed. So knowing that he exists is kind of exciting. Yes.
Yeah, like not that we would have noticed, because it's not like he was getting minutes before then.
Yeah, no, he went on loan. He came back. He was there. No one really expected he was going to play. Kind of surprised that he was still there, and then here he is. So, I mean, it's kind of exciting. In like, we already know we have players who are kind of terrible who are going to play, like Llorente, but I don't know that he's terrible. I figure he is, but hey, sure, give it a shot. See what happens.
It's just weird because it really makes you wonder what it was that Janssen did or didn't do that Nkudu did the opposite of. That Nkudu still gets
continually turned down loan offers is apparently one thing that we know he did.
I mean, you know, look, I 100% believe that Vincent Janssen is a better striker today than Fernando Llorente is, and that we would be not like great, but we would be in a better position if Pochettino would just swallow whatever dumb pride he has and play Janssen.
Hey, he's running a cult here, all right?
I mean, I think it's clear that he crossed some sort of line with Pochettino or Levy, and I mean, I think it's, you look at the fact that we had a loan lined up for him at Brighton, and he turned them down and said he didn't want to go.
Didn't he also like break his foot shortly before he went the transfer deadline?
I think that was right after he turned down a loan.
Okay,
and then he turned down, apparently it came out this week that he turned down a loan to Sevilla, which is, both of those are really strange, because like, if he wants to get out of here and Spurs want to get rid of him, those are both pretty good moves where I think he'll, at least at Brighton, I think he would have gotten minutes last year. And I don't understand why he's being picky, because I think it's clear to everybody that dude's on his way out of here.
Yeah, the Sevilla one is a little baffling because that's an actual good team. And when he was on loan in Turkey last year, he didn't play particularly well.
Brighton,
so...
like, you go to Brighton.
I think it's just he doesn't want a loan because he doesn't want to have to do this all over again.
But
summer.
Well, tough shit. Like, maybe you shouldn't have sucked when you started at Spurs. Like, you know, go get a loan to Brighton. Like, Brighton's probably a great place for him because you might be able to stay in England there and keep getting massively overpaid compared to what you'll get on the continent. I mean, it's just, I don't know. I don't understand what he's doing, but I think that's clearly what happened with Janssen in a way that hasn't happened with Nkudu.
Yeah, well, Pochettino in the past has had some pretty harsh things to say about Nkudu in terms of like his ability and his willingness to train hard,
but he also never got exiled to the under 23s. I mean,
right? So which
he got like a squad number this year, which is more than I could say about Thick Vin.
Makes you think that whatever Janssen did, it was not just like he's not good in training.
Well, maybe it was because, he wasn't good in training, but it certainly wasn't.
But Nkudu wasn't good in training either. So either Nkudu has like gotten his shit together, or there was some other type of transgression that Pochettino said you're out, and no amount of Fernando Llorente kicking the ball into his own goal is going to change that.
Ah, yes. So let's use that as a lovely transition piece. Let's talk about Fernando Llorente in this team. Rob, how do you think of how he was used this weekend?
So, you know, I watched the game with you, Greg, and we spent a lot of time yelling at him.
It was very smart of Fulham to deploy him as a shadow striker. That was very good.
That was a nice
Why don't
finish.
Spurs ever do things innovative like that? Like, come on, Levy.
Kick the ball off the other team's striker into the
goal. Pay him off before the match.
They need a coach for that, a special teams coach. On the one hand, we saw Fernando Llorente kick the ball into his own goal, head the ball right at the goalie, whiff on another header entirely, kick the ball right at the goalie with all of the force of a two-week-old puppy. On the other hand, you could say that he got himself into those positions in the first place, well, with the exception of the own goal. So
I mean, he did get himself into that position too.
Yes, he did, but he did get shots, and you know, maybe you know, historically in his career, one thing he was always pretty good at, as far as I know, is finishing. So if he can continue to get himself into positions, he might actually score one of these goals in the correct goal. That's my optimistic
take.
It
was kind of interesting to watch because, you know, on the site, you know, Joel wrote an article about how Spurs have been running this air raid offense, which is basically like quick transitions and getting our forward attackers onto these balls in the other half before they have a time to really settle. And you could see, I think, in the first half, they were still sort of trying to play that way, and they were playing some balls to Llorente that I think if it had been Son in particular, or even Harry Kane, I mean, those are things that those guys would have been able to, at a bare minimum, latch onto, if not bring it down and keep on running with it. And
yeah, they gave the ball away a shit ton.
But they definitely changed the way they played in the second half, I think. I think they were playing more, I don't know if catering to his talents or just playing more realistically is the right way to put it, but it seemed like they adjusted in the second half. That seems like a weird adjustment that they would have to make, because I feel like I can't imagine you go into that game thinking Llorente is going to run onto anything. But,
no, because that would involve running.
Well, exactly. So it's a little perplexing to me that we would play like that, but they seem to adjust. And, you know, I don't think his passing was particularly good. I don't think his hold-up play was stellar. But at the same time, like you said, he did manage to get a couple into some good shooting positions.
Yeah, and he totally screwed them up. But if you want to look at this glass half full, you know, it could get better, and they don't really have any other options, so you might have to.
Brian, I mean, you look at this, you look at how he played. Is this something you try to persist with and try and make work against, let's say, at least Chelsea, or Palace coming up after that? Or is this, the second Lucas Moura is healthy, it's like, Lucas, you're playing striker for the next few matches?
Yeah, I'm not interested in the Fernando Llorente experiment at all. Like, I just don't see it ever bearing any fruit. You know, Rob talked about, you know, he got himself into some decent positions or whatever, but, like, it's really easy to do that when you have, like, 70%+ possession and you're just kind of camped in the opposition half. He doesn't have to move a lot to be, you know, around the box in that situation. And that, I just don't think that that's going to be something, especially in the Chelsea game, that he's going to be able to do. And, yeah, I mean, against better teams, definitely don't want to see him out there. I guess if we have to play him against, you know, teams like Fulham, like Cardiff, like
Palace.
Yeah, I don't know. Palace...
Well, I don't know. I don't know what to expect out of Palace in an FA Cup match.
Yeah. Sure, maybe because Palace kind of sit deep and they like to counter, and so maybe he's useful there where you're going to expect to have more of the ball still. But I really, like I said, I have no interest in seeing this continue. I'd rather we chuck Lucas Moura out there. I won't go so far as to say that I'd rather see, you know, Sterling or Parrott play, just because I think that's a little bit.
I think that's extremely unrealistic. Like, I'm not adverse to, like, I was definitely late in that game, as Rob can attest, yelling at them to bring on Sterling or, you know, anyone.
We still had enough sub left, so we could have brought on anyone.
Well, at that point, I was just, you know, because Fulham was clearly playing for the draw late, and I was just like, fucking, just at least, like, have someone run at them to, you know, fucking cause chaos, which I guess Nkudu sort of fills that void. And Nkudu was absolutely the right choice because that cross definitely won us that game, but I don't know. I don't feel good with Llorente out there. And Brian, you make a really good point that, you know, we were dominating possession and, you know, Fulham just aren't that good. And I don't know. I don't think it didn't you know, I guess one of the ideas about buying Llorente was you could throw him into the box, you know, in a crowded box, and he would be able to sort of dominate in the air, or at least, like, control the area a little bit. And, you know, I didn't see any of that in the Fulham game.
I mean, look, he won a lot of headers. Like, he won, like...
Yeah, they didn't go to anybody.
I don't remember what the number was, but it was like he won, like, double-digit aerial duels. Now he subsequently turned the ball over almost every single time after winning those aerial duels. But he, like, as in terms of being a target man that you can knock the ball towards, yeah, that worked out fine. It's just, like, he doesn't...
Of course, that's also a problem when his headers are straight at the keeper or completely wide of the goal.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he doesn't have the same level of understanding as the rest of our attackers do. Like, you know, when a ball gets played up to Kane or Dele Alli as an outlet from defense... They can basically one-touch the ball into an area, and that they know that an attacker, you know, one of their teammates, Eriksen or Lamella or Lucas or Son, is moving into. Llorente doesn't have that understanding with any of these guys yet, and so I guess if you're going to make an argument for him to continue playing, it's that, like, oh, he obviously wins those aerial duels. At a certain point, him and the other guys will get on the same page, and those knockdowns that were turnovers will start becoming knockdowns that result in us dribbling through defense and getting good chances. But that's a long way away, I feel like.
Almost certainly. So, Rob, how are you feeling about the Chelsea match?
Terrified.
Well,
usual.
Okay. That's just a base foundation level feeling.
Well, I don't know if that actually bodes well for their chances, because usually the more terrified I am, the better it actually turns out. Thankfully they won't have a striker again, so there's that. Part of it is that I have no idea how they're gonna line up. Well, how either team's gonna line up, really, but I don't know how Spurs are going to line up. We might see Dyer start, which would actually make me feel a whole lot better. Weirdly enough. And again, we don't know who's going to play striker, whether they're going to go with Llorente again, whether they're going to try to sit on their lead or actually try to attack. I would be surprised if they actually tried to sit on their lead, because we all know how that would go.
And at 1-0, it's just not, like, that secure of a lead. If it was 2-0, maybe.
Yeah, or if it was 1-0 and then you were at home for the second leg. But
well, the nice thing is we're the only team who can get an away goal now. So, you know, I think the League Cup rules are, if it's a semifinal and there's a blood moon and, you know, a parrot has died at 3 o'clock in the afternoon on the day of the game, then away goals count. It's a very stupid rule. I think it only counts if we go into extra time. It's extremely awful and stupid. But hey, we have that advantage, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's something about firstborn children. But, you know, one thing I will say, I am 100% sure it will not be 0-0 in this game.
I don't know. Like,
there's going to be goals.
Chelsea really didn't seem up for that first match. And I mean, I don't know. Neither team seemed quite as up for that. That seemed very subdued for a Spurs Chelsea match. But I could see Sarri kind of quietly selling this game out. I'm not sure. I mean, he got his extremely large striker who won't be able to play against us, which I don't know if I should be thankful for that or not. But
well, he did pretty well against us when he played for Juve, but. Yeah, something's weird with Sarri at Chelsea. So you're not wrong that we don't quite know what to expect from them. I would think at home, with this being the deciding leg, that they'll raise their game a little bit. And we're not good defensively at the moment. We didn't really talk about it in the full match, but... we gave up some really good chances to Ryan Babel. So,
as you know, you do,
as one does. So yeah, we're not in great shape defensively, although we may have something resembling a midfield. And maybe three center backs.
I was going to say, yeah, do you think we stick with the three center backs? Because, I mean, I think theoretically against a Sarri team that is playing the way that Sarri likes to play, the three center backs probably doesn't work because the wide forwards are dragging you out of position, the striker is dropping deep and moving into positions that require the center back to chase him, and then you have the two more attacking of the midfielders making those line-breaking runs through the now out-of-position central defenders. So I don't know if the 3-5-2 or whatever, 3-4-1-1, whatever we want to call it, if that's going to work against theoretical Sarri ball.
Yeah, the three center back set up against no strikers kind of seems like a weird matchup, but maybe so weird that it would actually work. And the benefit, which we saw a little bit against Fulham, is that the three center backs allows Vertonghen and Alderweireld, or whichever of them will actually play, to basically be auxiliary playmakers. And they're pretty good at that. So
I'm just really hoping that we see Eric Lamella man marking Jorginho.
Man murdering.
That could be fun. That could be really fun.
It's man murdering.
I mean, that's going to be what, Dyer and Lamella taking turns, just trying to kill Jorginho.
Yeah, it's a real shame that Fabregas is gone, because I feel like Lamella would have wanted one more shot at him.
Lamella might take a transfer to like Lyon or something. Just follow him around.
We can dream.
Eric Lamella, serial killer. I kind of like this idea, actually. So do y'all have any predictions? This match is tomorrow. You have any predictions how this all shakes out?
Well, I have a feeling that by tomorrow evening, I will be very sad.
Because Chelsea's advanced to the final, or because you know we're going to get waxed by City in the final?
I'm not going to make a prediction as to why I'm sad. I'm just going to say that I'm definitely going to be sad.
Is it because late-era capitalism is grinding you down and you can barely stand to get out of bed in the morning to go to your crushing job?
Well, there's that, the inevitable heat death of the universe, all those sorts of things. But yeah, also, we'll probably lose to Chelsea. There's that too.
Robert?
Well, I guess I have to be the optimistic one.
I don't know how I feel about this. Let's stop while we're ahead.
Know your role.
Let's stop while we're ahead.
I will say that it will be a 1-1 draw. And we will advance. We will advance to be slaughtered by City. But it means we get into a cup final.
Hey, what could go wrong? So, obviously, Spurs are not going to buy anyone this transfer window. Let's wrap up on transfer news. But we had a fun transfer rumor today, which the bulk of it was, and I don't even know how realistic it was because it was being circulated on Twitter. The bulk of it was that now with De Jong at Barcelona, that Rabiot is no longer going to get transferred from PSG to Barcelona, despite the fact that Barcelona have made an offer to him. Spurs are apparently, at Mauricio Pochettino's behest, going to make an offer to him that is less, but Pochettino is going to try and use his voodoo powers to make him come here anyway, despite the fact that we know how difficult Mama Rabiot is to deal with. And, I don't know, he publicly said that he thought Spurs were beneath him this year. So I'm not holding out a lot of hope, but now that the bitch you know as Rabiot is back, let's start with what would he add to the team. Brian, I mean, what kind of a difference would the bitch you know as Rabiot make if he came to Spurs?
He would be our best midfielder by several miles. He just does everything. You know, he's an excellent passer. He breaks up play. He makes interceptions. He's, you know, he's fairly mobile. He's a big dude. He wins headers. He just does everything. He's great. So yeah, he'd add everything. All the stuff we lost from Moussa Dembélé, and you know, a little something different as well.
Is there any chance he ends up at Spurs?
No, zero, none.
You think it's not even a remote possibility that he's like, fuck it.
I think he had one of the reasons he is not happy at PSG is that he sees himself as the type of player that should be playing more and should be more valuable to PSG. He sees himself as being, you know, on an equivalent talent level as Neymar and Mbappe and those types of guys, and he doesn't get the respect and the recognition that he feels like he deserves. And also, he doesn't really play as much as he feels like he should. He feels like he should be getting a lot of Verratti's minutes, and he doesn't. So, you know, I don't know that he's... I think he thinks Spurs are going to be beneath him. You know, I
mean, we'd certainly give him more minutes than he gets at PSG.
Sure, I think he'd certainly play more, and he'd definitely be first choice, and there's that. But I just don't... I think that he thinks he is of a certain level, and the level that he is in his head means that his destinations are like Bayern, Madrid, Barcelona, City, and United, and maybe Chelsea, I guess.
Rob, do you have any additional Rabiot-based thoughts?
I just have a real hard time seeing him joining our cult. I think peeling him away from his mom agent would probably be too difficult. And he probably wants way more money than we're willing to pay the players we already have. So I can see why this is a very appealing idea, in the sense that there isn't really a transfer fee, or if there is one, it's pretty minimal. So Spurs would be saving money on the fee that they could then put into his wages. But yeah, it's not going to happen. I mean, the Pochettino is going to call him and persuade him story is interesting. I kind of wonder where that comes from, but I wouldn't be shocked if that's not
the kind of thing that happens anytime we're at least trying very hard to get somebody. And I wouldn't be, for all the reasons you just said, I would be shocked if they were trying to shoot the moon here. Because, I mean, if he wants to leave PSG, he doesn't have a ton. I mean, I guess Chelsea or Madrid might try and get him, but I don't think he's got a ton of options here at this point.
No, and I mean, maybe there's something about that personal touch that Pochettino offers that he feels he doesn't get from PSG, but I have a feeling he wants to be a starter on a Champions League team and make a shitload of money.
I mean, he can literally do all those things at Spurs, just, you know.
Yeah, he's going to wait.
He could probably do them on a team a little more. He could probably do them on a team that's a little more likely to win the Champions League and could pay somewhat more than we could. So.
Yeah, well, we've got, you know, basically everything except we don't pay top dollar and we don't win a lot of trophies, which, you know, are two things that are kind of important to,
a lot of players. I feel like one of those is more important than the others for him, but I'll let you be the judge of that. So, yeah, that's it. It's kind of a short week for us. Hopefully no one else gets injured between now and our next podcast. So, yeah, we'll talk to you then. Rob, where can people find you on the inner tubes?
I am Reno Wallabout on Twitter, and all of my other IP addresses have been shut down.
Brian, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock, and I didn't have a bit ready. I don't know. Tumblr's not for porn anymore, so I'm not there. I guess, you know, you can try me on Reddit. It's reddit.com/Brett Rainbow. Who knows what's there?
You're no longer tooting at Mastodon, Brian?
You know, I just really got tired of tooting all the time. I felt like it was really impacting my social interactions.
Well, that's the idea, I mean.
Yeah, I guess.
And you can find me on Twitter at skipjack0079. And, of course, you can find me on OKCupid at Brett Rainbow. So for Rob,
is that how OkCupid works?
I don't know how it's been. It has literally been 9 years since I met my wife on OkCupid, so I haven't used it in a very long time.
Aw, that's a commercial. Look, we got to get some advertising.
We're sponsored, yes.
Ah man, I can't wait to do those ad reads. Those
are you
great.
Looking? Are you looking for stringless
casual
sex to,
sex
to,
and to
casual sex to distract
again?
Yourself from Dele Alli's injury? Well, look no further. OkCupid's highly designed algorithms will find someone ready to take your mind off whatever fresh hell Spurs have cooked up for you this week.
Well, yeah, that was good. I can hardly wait to be sponsored. I'm so excited.
We need to get Brett Rainbow to do the ad reads, though.
Just all Australian basketball camps.
Yep, there we go. See, we found our niche.
We did. We really did. All right, guys. Thank you for helping us get through a surprisingly depressing week, despite an exciting last-minute winner. Rob.
Before we go, we just have to talk one more time about how hilarious the end of that game was.
It was really, really funny.
Unless you're a Fulham fan, and that's probably pretty infuriating.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that was hilarious.
It was pretty funny. I'm not gonna say it's because I had two donuts and drank a beer, but it was probably definitely because I had two donuts and drank a beer at on a Sunday morning. So
wow, one beer, you rebel.
Well, with a donut, that was before noon. That was quite something. So anyway, for Ryan, for Rob, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I am your host, Skip Jack. Come on, you Spurs.